is DW News live from Berlin. EU leaders say the lifting vaccine patents won't be a magic bullet in the coronavirus pandemic. They've held a second day of talks and are pushing the United States for a concrete plan. India's Prime Minister joined them via video link. We'll go live to our correspondent. For the first time, Indian officials have recorded more than 4,000 COVID-19 deaths in one day. Despite aid getting through, experts fear that things could get worse before they get better. And what goes up must come down. A Chinese rocket makes an uncontrolled return to Earth after launching part of a space station. Hello, I'm Rahila Mohammed. EU leaders have wrapped up a two-day summit dominated by the COVID-19 crisis in India. They agreed to restart trade talks with Delhi, but there are divisions over a US proposal to waive patents on coronavirus vaccines.
Heads of state and government gathered in spring sunshine in the Portuguese city of Porto. Uppermost in everyone's minds, the relentlessly rising death toll in India.
The European Union stands in full solidarity with India at this critical time. We already activated help mechanisms and we are ready to provide further support.
EU leaders agreed to resume negotiations on a free trade deal with India. The talks broke down 8 years ago. Also dominating proceedings, a controversial US proposal to lift patents on COVID-19 vaccines. India strongly supports the idea as a means of opening up new sources of production. But bigger EU states oppose the plan. They want to ramp up their own output instead. I do not believe that giving away patents is the solution to making vaccines available to more people. We need the creativity and innovation of those firms, and that is why I believe in patent protection. Some member states also criticize the US and Britain for stockpiling vaccines. Before liberalizing vaccines, other simpler things should be done, such as removing the export block that the US and the UK continue to maintain. Bear in mind that the EU exports as much vaccine as it gives to its own citizens. As the summit wraps up, Europe is passing the ball back to the US, challenging Washington to come up with concrete plans for waiving vaccine patents and to start exporting much-needed jabs beyond its own borders.
Well, for more on this, let's speak to DW's Brussels Bureau Chief, Alexandra von Naumann, who is in Porto, Portugal, covering the story for us. So, Alexandra, what were the key moments at the summit?
Well, I think it was very telling that both sides, the European Union and India, praised their summit as a pivotal moment, a moment of geopolitical importance. They made clear that they are willing and ready to deepen their partnership and to boost cooperation in many key areas, including digitalization, climate change, and trade. And talking about trade, we just heard about it, that they announced to restart negotiations on a new trade agreement. And that is, of course, very important for the European Union. They want a better access for their companies and they want the tariffs on European products to be reduced. But of course, we have to add that the trade policy will be the true test over whether both sides are really able to improve their relationship. Very high on the agenda here, of course, COVID-19, and the European Union made it clear that they are willing to help India, but they also stressed that they think that the proposal on vaccine patents was not going to be the silver bullet to improve the situation. Instead, they are arguing that it's more important to increase production of vaccines, and they also called on other Western nations, in particular on the United States, to export more vaccines.
And Alexandra, how important is this meeting for India?
Well, we have to keep in mind then that this meeting came at a very, very difficult moment for India, as the country is fighting the pandemic and a surge in COVID-19 infections. And that was the reason why Prime Minister Modi was not able to participate in this summit in person. He was pushing the European Union to back his proposal to lift intellectual property rights on vaccine. He was not successful there, but the discussion is still going on. And overall, when we look at the outcome of the summit and the announcement on trade talks, it was successful for Prime Minister Modi, especially because he was able to show that the European Union is a good strategic partner, and that is important for him in the face of increasingly assertive China in the region.
All right, that is Alexandra von Naumann. Thank you so much. Well, the meeting in Porto came as India reported its highest death toll since the beginning of the pandemic, registering more than 4,000 deaths from COVID-19 in just 24 hours. But critics warn the official figures undercount the full extent of the crisis.
In some places in India, it is hard to believe the country is in crisis. In the southern city of Hyderabad, Muslims celebrating the end of Ramadan are out shopping, some feeling lax about safety rules. Before forcing regular citizens to comply with COVID-19 guidelines, national leaders and lawmakers need to follow health safety measures themselves. Then common people will also follow them. Many mosques remained shut over coronavirus fears despite the weekend's Islamic holidays and preparations for the Eid festival. Still, others ignored official warnings and let people gather for prayer in large numbers. Gatherings like these are driving India's second coronavirus wave. It has been much more infectious, partly due to new variants of the virus. As the number of those testing positive surges, so does the death count. Relatives are desperate to get help for their infected loved ones in time. Since this morning, I've been trying to get an oxygen cylinder for my father. The government says there is no oxygen shortage, but look at the number of people waiting here. In 2 hours, you will see that at least two or three people will leave in tears. Burial sites and crematoriums are overwhelmed. Many are now forced to bring the bodies to makeshift cremation sites instead. For now, India continues to count its losses to the pandemic in more fire and smoke.
Well, here are some other stories making headlines around the world. At least 40 people have been killed and dozens wounded in multiple explosions near a girls' school in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul. The Interior Ministry says many were students aged between 11 and 15. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack. Pro-independence parties have won a majority in Scotland's parliamentary election. First Minister and leader of the Scottish National Party, Nicola Sturgeon, says there is no democratic justification whatsoever for London to block a new referendum on Scotland's independence from the UK. And anthropologists have discovered the fossil remains of 9 Neanderthal men in a cave near Rome. Italy's culture ministry says the oldest could date back to 100,000 years. Neanderthals are the closest ancient relatives of humans. Now, a large Chinese rocket is set to plunge back through the Earth's atmosphere in a mission that's being closely watched by international experts. The 21-ton rocket carried the core part of China's future space station. The Chinese government says most of the debris will burn up on re-entry and is very likely to smash into the ground. But U.S. experts warn that potentially dangerous debris could escape incineration, and it's impossible to pinpoint where it will land yet. Well, let's talk to Jonathan McDowell, an astronomer at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you very much indeed, sir, for being with us here on DW News. So tell us more about this massive chunk of metal plunging back to Earth. How big of a concern is this?
you know, it's a moderate concern. Individual people shouldn't be panicked because the chance that it's going to hit them is really small. But we did see the last time this type of rocket was launched, large chunks of metal crash at hundreds of miles an hour into the Ivory Coast, damaging a couple of buildings and really scaring people. So probably because so much of the world is water, this will fall in the ocean, but there's a significant chance that it won't. And so we are tracking this very closely.
Do we know where it's heading exactly?
So we're starting to get an idea. So we believe it's going to come down sometime between 23 hours and 9 hours Greenwich Mean Time. And that's four orbits of the Earth. So it goes all the way around the Earth four times during that time. And so we can say some areas now, like the Western United States or like China, in fact, are no longer under the potential track of this rocket. But there's a lot of other countries that still are. So it won't really be until after it crashes that we can really figure out where it came down.
And you also mentioned previous cases, like you said, in Ivory Coast. So there have been similar cases where debris has crashed back to Earth. Is there anything that can be done to prevent any large-scale damage in this case?
Not in this case. It's too late. It's going to come down where it's going to come down. It's going at 18,000 miles an hour, 28,000 kilometers an hour around the Earth. It's about 150 kilometers up right now. It's going to burst into flame, break apart. The debris, probably about a ton, might survive reentry. And there's really nothing you can do about it. All we can do is try and persuade China that before the next launch of this type of rocket, they change the design to be more like what other countries do for their big rockets and make sure that this stage does not go into orbit.
Is there regulation on how to mitigate space debris, if any?
You know, there's no law, right? But there are some guidelines that most countries adopt in terms of how long you should let your space debris stay in orbit, where it can be. But there's no rule right now about not letting big things fall out of orbit. And I think there really needs to be. There is a liability convention. If your rocket falls on me, my country can get compensation from you. But that's as far as it goes right now.
All right, that is Jonathan McDowell from the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Now in Bundesliga football, Dortmund beat Leipzig 3-2. The loss ends Leipzig's title hopes and hands Bayern Munich their ninth straight title. Well, Jadon Sancho scored two of Dortmund's three goals. He displays some brilliant ball control here and accuracy to make it 2-0. You can also check out how Sancho backheeled the ball to Rafael Guerrero, who then fed it back to Sancho to seal the victory with 3 minutes to go. And as we mentioned, Bayern Munich has now won the Bundesliga, their ninth in a row. Here's a look back at how they got here.
Coach Hansi Flick was unable to repeat Bayern's prolific trophy haul from last season. And an apparent rift with his superiors likely brought his time at the club to a premature end. But on the pitch, it was business as usual. Bayern demolished Schalke 8-0 in their opening game of the season. Robert Lewandowski proved once again his nose for goals. He's well on his way to set a new Bundesliga goal record. And yet so much about the season was unusual. The coronavirus pandemic meant that most games were played without spectators.
Plenty of jostling.
And there was nothing normal about Bayern losing 4-1 to Hoffenheim earlier in the season. The champions responded, however, in typical fashion by going 12 games unbeaten. It would be January before their next defeat at Borussia Mönchengladbach. Their form was never quite as imperious as in the first half of the season, but they won when it mattered. A 1-0 victory at Leipzig in early April all but put an end to the hopes of their closest challengers. Even Flick's surprise announcement that he would leave didn't dent his players' winning mentality. And once again, they wrap things up with games to spare. For Flick, it's Auf Wiedersehen, Bayern. And with the position of national coach soon to be vacant, could it be Guten Tag, Germany?
watching DW News from Berlin. Up next is Doc Film, Germany's car industry powered by politics. I'll see you soon after that. Bye.